Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Censored. I'm Aoife Frithnoch.
And I'm Lloyd Maeve Houston.
And we are going into the 80s in a big way. We're going to be talking about the cars, the hair, and the sex, actually. Quite a lot of sex and nudity.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, if copyright were less of a consideration, we'd open with, you know, the iconic needle drop with which the film we're going to discuss opens, which we were both astonished to learn was written and recorded for this movie. So, you know, imagine this with Strains of Blondie's Call Me under it.
And imagine we're both in a Mercedes driving down the freeway in America with the wind in our hair.
Perfectly coiffed hair.
Just as Richard Gere is at the very opening scenes of American Gigolo.
Woo! If you've gone away and watched the Rob Schneider comedy, then you've watched the wrong one. But yeah, also just imagine our shoulders like 5 to 7 inches wider for every kind of scene in this. Although actually it's not too shoulder paddy a movie. We're not yet in that phase of 80s fashion.
Yeah, it's quite restrained, the shoulder pads. The lip colour hasn't quite gone shiny pink yet. Mm. They're still quite restrained. That said, I can't wear a shoulder pad to save my life. You will never see me in one.
Whereas you can barely keep me out of them. So, you know, we're really entering my aesthetic sort of home base with this. But it, you know, it is just a kind of cusp 80s movie, right? It's 1980. So it's, you know, there's some people in it who still look like they're in the 70s.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And it's one that I chose from Kevin Rockett's big book. He gave it like a quick line or two where he said, you know, it's one of those films from this time period that is cut for language. And I thought, oh, okay. I mean, I wonder what they could say that needed cutting. And he didn't really go into any details. So I just thought, well, it sounds fun. It's 1980. It's not a time that we think of the censor as being particularly active. So it'd be fun to watch it. But my God, Kevin, you were underselling what they needed to cut.
Probably not even the language they necessarily cut at the time. But yeah, within about 2 minutes, Richard Gere says, in the space of one sentence, two words back to back that made me wince, like aggressively. Like there's, yeah, there's an R and an F that's not fuck, you know, a homophobic F that just back, I was like, okay, we are, So it's a Paul Schrader movie. It's the guy who did, you know, Taxi Driver, among other things. So it's, I know that kind of salty, like, oh, you know, people are talking rough and direct. I understand that it's meant to give us a sense of groundedness, but yeah, the intervening 43 years have really caught up with some of the things. I guess also, you know, we can circle back to it, but the place of male same-sex desire in this movie and the actual, like, intentional deployment of homophobia in it, not as something the film endorses, but the film seems to be interested in commenting on, bears discussion. But yeah, I guess, yeah, tiny content note for anyone watching this off the back of it. It's just a few moments where you're like, you wash your mouth out with soap, Richard. You said a bad thing.
Yeah, there were a fair few homophobic slurs in this that you're like, oh, again, ooh, okay, right. But like you say, we will discuss that later because I'm sure they were cut. But he also did use the C word at one point, and I'm almost certain that was cut. And also because of how it was placed in the cinematography, it would be easy to cut that actually without like making it too obvious.
Yeah.
But if he cut a lot of the F words, it must have been quite difficult to get those out and keep keep the film moving in the way that it was intended. Because this film was rated 18s in Ireland, also 18s by the BBFC in the UK. And according to the disc that I watched, 16s in Germany. So cultural standards vary.
The Berlin club scene would make this film look pretty tame, I suppose. I mean, horses for courses.
Yes. But the interesting thing about the film, although it was released with 2.5 minutes of cuts, according to the newspapers at the time, it was initially banned. The censor, the one man censor, was Frank Hall at the time. And he said, no way. And then it was appealed to the panel, which is a little committee of the Censorship Appeals Board. And they said, yeah, sure, just a few cuts. So it's an interesting example of something that, under a system where the appeals board always agreed with the censor, it would never have been released.
Yeah, I'm intrigued as to what was cut, or what we know was cut, because there are a few, if not, I guess, like, firsts. Like, there's some things in this film that one doesn't often get to see, let's say, even in sort of similar films of the era.
It did get an R rating in the US and was, I think, one of the first films of that time, according to Karina Longworth in our podcast, You Must Remember This, to feature full frontal nudity.
But specifically,
by a man.
Male full frontal nudity. So if you want to see Richard's gear, then you can. There's also, to recycle a joke I made before the podcast, that there are a lot of jokes about circumcision and cutting that I'm not going to make. but yeah, if you want an eyeful of Richard Gere, you can certainly find it in this film. And it is a film that, like, interestingly, you know, the camera lingers lovingly on his physical form and on the, you know, the kind of male physical form in quite an interesting way. And in a way that, like, I mean, obviously the title makes it sort of explicit, I suppose, but, like, American Psycho, both book and film, heavily indebted to this movie, right? Like, our protagonist here is such a sort of proto Patrick Bateman in terms of his, you know, like the way we are given this sort of very almost forensic sort of insight into the exact manner in which he, like, exercises and dresses and maintains his kind of appearance and keeps himself, you know, match fit, shall we say.
I suppose it does at this point have, you know, open us into, maybe we should tell people what the basic plot is. The basic plot that we expected was Richard Gere shagging older ladies. That's pretty much the way it's sold. And that's also the way it was received, according to Karina Longworth's podcast anyway. It was really fed into a debate about women's sexuality and whether women could be fucking like men in a no commitments, just for the sake of it, and in a commercial context, in ways that women are not traditionally represented in their sexuality. So I listened to her podcast after I watched the film, and she was going on and on about how Richard Gere was, like, the stud for about 5 years. He's on every front cover of every magazine, you know, the cameras, like, loving him, the whole thing. And I was like, I didn't watch this film. I don't understand what this is about on a number of levels. And the first and foremost is, I just didn't feel it for Richard.
Yeah. Feel free to quibble with us in the inbox. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I understand that, like, in the abstract, in an objective, you know, kind of sense, he is a conventionally attractive man, but he's, yeah, he wouldn't be my cup of tea, particularly. Or certainly not in this. He gets a bit more crag to him, maybe. There's also a sort of it's a weird point where Richard Gere starts sort of looking like Edward Said in a way I'm much more on board for somehow. But a lot of energy is expended in the film emphasizing to us quite how hot this guy is. But also in a weirdly cold way that I think is probably intentional. There's something quite kind of anhedonic and like flat about the sort of sensuality of parts of the film, at least as it pertains to him and Schrader seems to have, you know, intended that. Like, he talks about how this is a man who knows how to give pleasure but does not know how to receive it or allow it into his kind of life or allow himself to be sort of made vulnerable by it. So it's probably a deliberate thing, but it's just a bit like, ah, yeah, he wears a suit. Well, I don't know.
I mean, it was interesting to me listening to Carina Longworth going on about this reception of the film as Richard Gere as the ultimate beefcake. And I was like, I just, yes, like you say, but he's not sexy. It might indeed be all about sex, but he himself and the way the character is portrayed and the way he's shot, I would argue really until he becomes a bit more human towards the end, where he softens and he loses the suit, actually. He changes his clothes as, you know, as the film progresses. He gets a bit of stubble and he looks a lot more interesting and he becomes more emotionally vulnerable. And then he is attractive in a way that in the first half of the film, he's like the car, he's like the suits. He's a beautiful object and we're all supposed to think we want it.
We also have not summarized the plot of this film. We have just gone off on a tangent about Richard Gere again. Okay, briefly, to curtail that, about relatively late almost in the film, but I guess probably about the sort of act one break, he is called upon to, by one of his sort of pimps, this guy Leon, played by Bill Duke, who we learn later in the film is gay in a way that is kind of significant for the plot. He's asked to do this sort of like, almost like, you know, called out of retirement to do like one more job. He's sort of like, can you see this person? Like, I had someone cancel on me. And Richard Gere, he makes, as he does throughout the film, he's like, no F stuff. So no same sex stuff and no, you know, kind of kinky stuff. And he's sort of told that it'll be like this, you know, kind of vanilla job. And then he gets there and this older guy is like, initially he thinks that he's going to be asked to fuck this guy and is like, no, I want you to fuck my wife, but I want to watch. And then he's like, hit her. And Richard Gere is like, makes it very clear that he's kind of uncomfortable with this in his sort of look to camera. And then the guy's like, hit that C word. Or sorry, cunt. I can say cunt. Can I say cunt?
Yes. You can say
cunt. But anyway, alongside this, he, through chance, meets this older woman who seems like the kind of normal client for him, but actually it turns out she's not looking to pick him up, and then she does come after him. They form a relationship. Turns out she's a married woman, married to this very kind of up-and-coming senator, who we're told is a comer in what the film clearly intends in every sense. And then he sees in the newspaper that the woman he was with for this sort of weird, kinky, you know, what seemed like a sort of BDSM-y but not terribly balanced sort of scene with this woman, she has been found murdered and a bunch of jewels stolen. And the rest of the film plays out as like him being fitted up for this murder. So it becomes this kind of neo-noir, and eventually, long story short, after various kind of complexities, the woman whom he's been falling in love with and having this affair with comes through and kind of sacrifices her reputation to be like, no, look, I'm your alibi for that night. We were together. He can't have done this murder. And they end the film. By this point, he's been imprisoned, or he's in jail. They end the film, you know, kind of him resting his hand against his head against her hand through the, you know, sort of prison glass in a shot that's a deliberate homage to the end of Bresson's The Pickpocket. We can maybe talk about, like, Schrader has a huge love for that film and it inflects the whole thing. But yeah, anyway, so neo-noir, false accusation, you know, sort of sex thriller thing, but emerging out of a movie that people only ever seem to think of in terms of a particularly well-coiffed Richard Gere, Richard Gere kind of shags a lot. He's presented in such weird and kind of decontextualized ways. Like, there's a really odd sequence where he exercises by, like, putting on these weird sort of cuff things on his ankles and then pulling himself up. So he's suspended upside down by hooks on those ankle bracelets from a pull-up bar on the ceiling, and then proceeds to do these sort of, you know, back extension sort of exercises with dumbbells while trying to learn Swedish. And like Twin Peaks has a version of this, like it riffs on it, like Dale Cooper does that at one point. And like there are a few sort of instances where this crops up, and I didn't realize this film was like ground zero for, you know, buff man hangs upside down while doing something odd.
I mean, like I sent a photograph of him in the tiny shorts and, well, they look like space leg warmers, these metal cuffs. I sent that to one of my friends and she's like, what the fuck has he got on his feet?
Right.
Yeah, it looks so weird. And it's, I mean, it's clearly an extravagant way to talk about that he works out and that he wears short shorts and we get to look at him. It's, yeah. It's a clearly contrived excuse, but so elaborate and silly that you're like, like you say, it decontextualizes his sexuality and makes him odd.
Yeah, it makes him seem like a, like almost vampiric, right? I'm sure there's a kind of like, oh, he's a bat, you know, kind of imagery is perhaps sort of intended there. Also, the gym bro in me is like, Jesus Christ, my guy, there are more efficient ways to work out your back and core at the same time. Like, this is not it. This is just showing off. And also, your blood's going to rush your head and make it like a bad workout. I don't understand what you're doing. But
yeah, who wants to hang upside down for an extended period of time? It's unpleasant. It's just very
well.
Strange.
I mean, you know, in the right company and with the right rig. Like, anyway, but you know, this isn't that. This is not a situation where it's you know, conspiring to the pleasures that might lead to. But yeah, it's just it's part of a sequence that, like I say, feels like it's very deliberately echoed by, you know, Patrick Bateman doing his like 1,000 crunches and things, you know, where it's a similar sort of like, oh, this is an odd over cultivation of the body, or like an oddly inhuman way to do this. And you know, there's also all these sort of fetishistic shots of like, he has so many ties, like, oh my god, this man has ties
and suits. Those suits, I mean, did you see at the end it mentions where Richard Gere gets his suits and his shoes and nothing about his female co-star Lauren Hutton and her clothes? Like, nothing.
Well, apparently this is the film that launched Armani as a kind of going concern in the US and made them very popular with Hollywood. Because also, sorry, this is just, I was on Wikipedia. Originally, Travolta was cast as the lead in this, so they had to retailer all of the wardrobe that was cut for him because Travolta's so tall. So Richard Gere's in these like taken in John Travolta suits. But and again, it's the thing the film draws attention to whenever he has the first sort of sex scene was shown between him and the sort of main love interest figure, has these really weird sort of like abstracted shots where it'll like zoom in on a particular sort of intersection of different parts of their body in like very slow moving, you know. And it is, there's something like, you know, kind of abattoir-ish about this, like, right, it's you know, it looks like kind of meat being prepared for the table or something.
Especially the bit where it shows his hands reaching out to her breasts. It's like, oh no, not like that. That like, looks weird.
Touching a boob like someone who's never touched a boob before.
It's like, oh, it's so cartoonish. It's quite strange.
But well, I suppose, again, to be fair to the film, after that encounter, she's then like, the next time they see each other, she's sort of like, look, let's kiss, let's not fuck, because when we talk to each other and when we kiss, you're you. When we do that, it's work, and you like go into work mode, and it's in person. And so presumably it's meant to have looked weird, but it's really weird.
In my notes, I wrote down tiny scream, because I was just like, whoa, no, really? But that's what makes the response, the cultural response of Richard Gere as this sex bot, so odd in the context of a film where the sex is much more ambiguous than just women pick him up and he shags them. It is so much more complicated than that, well, not least because he's presented as possibly bisexual, or had certainly worked as a male sex worker before, and you're like, this is not the beefcake thing.
Well, yeah, this is what I was going to say. And you know, maybe this says more about me than it does anything else. For my money, there are no hot sex scenes in that film, and the hottest thing in it, or the most like sincere eroticism we see on screen, is the point at which he goes to, the very aptly named Probe nightclub to find Leon, the pimp, the Bill Duke character, who is involved in setting him up, and he's trying to, you know, he thinks this is what's going on. But what you say, what you get is a fantastic and surprise, again, for my money, something I wasn't expecting at all, a pretty frank sequence of, like, you know, the camera moving quite, like, following him through, you know, a leather daddy night space where a lot of, you know, very beefy men in harnesses and, you know, full regalia dancing quite hotly with each other. And it's the one time in the film where you're kind of like, oh yeah, there are people in this world who are having, like, sexy sex. It's just,
yes,
none of the people Richard Gere is fucking.
I actually thought exactly the same thing when he went into the whole tunnel kind of part as he's moving towards the dance floor. I was like, yes, this film has changed. It has shifted emotionally and sort of tonally. It just felt, yeah, it felt much more exciting and interested in what was happening to the people as opposed to them being quite flat.
Way less like forensic or sort of, you know, yeah, it's much more like focalized through him. It's also, I mean, just such a vibes movie in terms of, you know, like so many of the ways that the film uses, like, you know, heavy drenching of neon and kind of, you know, Giorgio Moroder synth score, these synth washes underpinning stuff. And, like, you know, like Michael Mann, for instance, like Heat and like and even earlier sort of films of his feel very heavily indebted to this. Like the like Miami Vice, you know, definitely borrows pretty liberally from the kind of visual palette of this movie. Like you say, it's ambiguous. It's unclear whether he is someone who is attracted to men and has kind of, you know, repressed that quite aggressively, or someone who has been obliged through his line of work to engage in sex work with men in a way that he never wants to revisit. It's unclear if even maybe he seems to have a handle on what his deal is. But yeah, it's this. Yeah, the movie really comes to life in that club sequence.
Yeah, I mean, I can just imagine how astonishing that whole sequence must have been to 1980s Irish audiences. Like, all of it is unimaginable in an Irish context. I mean, the look of it, the feel of it, the way everyone dresses, none of this is remotely possible. It's like watching people on outer space, I would have thought. You know, but that part must have been like, wow, just, in a, you know, given attitudes towards homosexuality at the time, it's not surprising Frank Hall wanted to ban it.
Yeah. We're a long ways from decriminalization on sort of either side of the border here. I mean, something that struck me about this also, just because it's, you know, it's LGBT plus History Month, and because I recently went to see a production of Larry Kramer's The Normal Heart. I suppose I was primed because of the sort of 80s setting and this club scene to kind of be like, oh, HIV, AIDS, you know, stigmas in the mix. But actually, it's 1980. So while HIV did exist prior to the 80s, like, it's not yet anywhere near the point where you have any sort of coverage of it. It's not a media sort of presence at all. It does belong to this sort of window of, like, increased visibility without yet the kind of massive intensification of stigma that would ensue within, you know, a few years. But it's, yeah, as you say, like, between the kind of, like, aspirational elements of this, where it's like, yeah, you know, no shade to 1980s Ireland. Like, I don't know that many people are off, you know, living the full Palm Springs existence that this film, you know, is at pains to kind of both fetishize but also expose the hollowness of. But also, you know, we're a long way from Gay Spar being, you know, a feature of Dublin life, let's say.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And I was wondering what you thought about the sort of redemptive arc of the film, about, like, and how that plays in terms of gender and sexuality, because it was, I didn't know what to think of it on some level. I thought, it seems terribly neat that this is the ending.
Mm.
But on the other, it kind of wove both the Richard Gere and Lauren Hutton character together as kind of, you know, reverse versions of each other in the way that they are. Like, Lauren Hutton's character is in a marriage where he wants her to get pregnant. He doesn't want her to travel. He wants her to hang around and make him look good.
Yeah.
And so she is repressing who she wants to be in order to fit his schema. And the Richard Gere character is projecting an image of someone that he isn't really in order to make money and in order to be this character.
It feels like a cop-out to say that it's sort of like deliberately ambiguous about this. And I don't know if, yeah, I can't quite make up my mind if it's ambiguous or like confused, but, or, you know, internally contradictory. But yeah, on the one hand, it seems pretty clear that like there is a kind of critique of 80s, you know, Reaganite, we're just getting into that, you know, sort of hyper-capitalism that sort of comes with this era. And the film seems skeptical of that. You know, you've got Leon at one point, whenever he sort of says, like, how much do I need to pay you to make this go away? Like, how much would it cost for you to sort of turn on the people who are getting you to frame me? And he's like, look, the other side, you know, whatever you offer, the other side will always have more, right? The rich look after themselves. You'll never be one of them. You know, and there's a lot of energy given over to like the shallow vapidity and like weirdly, you know, like borderline psychopathic or sociopathic sort of level of deceit and self-reinvention he persistently has to engage in to try and sort of secure this existence for himself. And so his relationship with this woman, you know, seems to be a kind of reconnection with an authenticity that's going to cost them both everything, but that like allows them to, you know, get back to like something true and meaningful and real and raw and all that. Part of that then obviously frames sex work in an extremely negative light, right? Where sex work is a kind of, you know, a prostituting of the self in that negative way, right? He becomes a commodity, et cetera, right? Particularly the way that that's like, in that sort of scheme, gay sex work is the worst thing that could be imagined for a man like him. And that, you know, and all of that makes my skin crawl for obvious reasons, or politically gets my back up. But at the same time, there's a whole other strand to the film where he has quite lyrical speeches where he's like, look, that woman hadn't been touched by someone in years. Like, her husband clearly had nothing but kind of contempt for her. It took 3 hours to make her come, but like, I did it. You know, and no one, I didn't think I was going to manage it, but, and no one else would have put in the time or the energy to like give this woman what she wants or needed, to like actually give her pleasure. And there's a point later in the film whenever, you know, he's being tackled about the sort of weird kind of professional way that he fucks, where he's like, but no, I give people pleasure. Like I tune into what they want, and I, you know, this isn't like, yes, it's commercial, but it's not cheap. You know, I give people satisfaction. And so there is a sense in which the film is like, no, like a certain version of sex work is good, you know?
Yeah.
But then everything else I just said, you know, is really in tension with that. So it's, yeah, I just don't know. Like, on the one hand, there's an arc to this film that's like, yeah, this, you know, this kind of confused, like corrupted, degraded figure is redeemed from queerness and commercial sex by the love of a good woman, and you know, they and like the kind of salvific energy of that ending, right? And Schrader in sort of paratextual material talks about like granting this character this like implausible, divine, miraculous salvation. So, you know, the kind of, you know, queer sex work inclusive feminist in me is like, fuck that. Like, that film can eat shit. But
yes, but...
But...
It is kind of a bit feminist in the way that she walks away from all of the commitments she made to a man who doesn't give a shit, and who is forcing her into a box that doesn't fit her. And she just goes, no, I'm going to walk away from that. And by doing that, I'm going to lie, firstly, that I have the alibi because she's lying. So the lie is made a noble choice rather than, you know, a poor one. And also she finds herself through engagement with someone who's a sex worker rather than, you know, it's not a classic love story. So it's kind of, like you say, I think confused is probably better than conflicted or ambiguous.
It's not a film that's probably intending for you to be sitting at the end, you know, sort of wokely applauding its good politics, right? You know, like in the same way that like Taxi Driver is both like an extremely telling document of a kind of political moment, but, you know, it's like Jodie Foster playing a child sex worker, you know, like there's a lot of fucked shit there that, so yeah, no, sorry, yeah, I was coming to my sort of but, which is that, yeah, there's this all this other energy in the movie that's pulling in a very different direction, and particularly, we talked about this with Rocky Road to Dublin, also that I think the cinematography, often the manner in which certain things are presented pulls against, like, what the text is saying in ways that gives pause, so... Yeah, it's really interestingly internally sort of divided, I think.
Do you want to hear what the Irish press thought of it?
Always.
Always. So the Irish press is one of the most widely read newspapers in the 1980s. It's associated with Fianna Fáil, who are pretty much the dominant political party. But, you know, obviously it's as well as got political news, it's got film reviews. And film reviews in the 80s, wow, they were really good. I read a few and they were very thoughtful and considered and engaged quite deeply with the film. So this is the Irish Press review, who says, "It is a film of Bressonian austerity in which Calvinistic subtext is quite admirably interwoven with a carefully graded investigation of a sex murder."
Good lord. Yeah, I was going to say, for like, that's to expect you to be familiar with both Bresson and Calvinism is, in one sentence is quite something.
In a standard daily newspaper, this isn't one of the newspapers that's sort of reaching for a highfalutin notions kind of kind of audience. So
this isn't the Irish Times.
I mean, you said it, not me. So in addition, the Irish press, in addition to talking about the Calvinistic kind of redemptive suffering and, you know, redemption through pain narrative that is part of the film, they do also discuss the cuts that Frank Hall made or that the appeals board demanded as a result of the appeal. And they say they're a bit sarky. They're like, well, the censor said that he loved film, but on the evidence of this, I can't say I agree, because they say that, you know, the sex scenes, quote unquote, like in double quotes, some of the sex scenes and dialogue have been cut. And they say he has removed them in the bluntest way possible. So it must have been obvious where the cuts were when people watched it.
Well, I mean, this is something we've often sort of wondered about is, you know, how legible is this kind of intervention? And yeah, I mean, you know, you joked about it earlier, but like, it is hard to sort of imagine stripping that out just because it's so sort of textured into the way the film works, especially if you're also trimming out, you know, language.
Yeah, but the good news is that if you did live in Dublin in 1980-81 and you wanted to see the full gear... and you wanted to hear all of those slurs, most of these films, after they had been cut or somehow censored, were then later shown in the Irish Film Theatre, which is run by the Irish Film Society. Yeah. So that seems to have been, from the references in the press, that seems to have been something that, yeah, you can see it in the commercial film context, but then later, maybe about 6 to 9 months later, you can go watch the full uncut version. So that's for Dublin audiences. They had the option to see it all. Though, of course, if you're in the bog, which, as we said before, is the countryside, not the toilet. We'll always have to add that in there. Yeah, if you're in the bog, obviously, unless you're in Dublin and able to go to the Irish Film Society, you don't get to see it. But it is interesting that there's kind of two versions of American Gigolo available to Dublin audiences, at least.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it's... Like I say, it, you know, it's another one of those films where you're like, oh, if you really start stripping stuff like this out, like, what's left, or what's the, you know, the kind of juice? And it's also just another instance of, like, you know, if the concern here is corrupt and depraved, or, you know, sort of moral sensibility, like, as we've made clear, the sex in this isn't going to make you, like, run out and want to get it on. Like, I mean, I guess, to be fair, like, given that it catapulted him to sort of sex symbol status, and everyone seems to be like, ooh, I, you know, never underestimate the capacity of audiences to find what they want in a film. but yeah, it's, you know, it's a real, yeah, form content thing. Like, I did not, with some exceptions, find myself terribly sort of juiced up by this movie, let's say.
I suspect it is that lush objectification and the riches and the aspirational part give me everything and all the ties and all the suits.
Maybe if you're living, as we established, you know, in the last episode, obviously the early 80s is Ireland is not experiencing the same boom that other economies are in this period. So maybe you would watch this and be like, ah, oh, Jesus, I could go for some of that hyper-capitalist sexual malaise right now. That would be wonderful.
But also, like, because it's a neo-noir, it's about, the torturing of somebody as beautiful as Gere. Like, you know, that's one of the things noir does. It takes these anti-heroes who are always beautiful and slightly remote, and then breaks them down and makes them cry. And it's a weird thing, but as an audience, it's actually quite pleasant to watch, because they become kind of softer and more human. And he does as he moves through that. And I think that, for me, was the best arc.
Trying to kind of map it onto a kind of conventional noir structure, like, is he the femme fatale in this?
I think he's the femme fatale, yeah.
He's the investigator lost in the kind of maze of the, you know, the machinations playing out around him and whatever. Our love interest isn't framed as, you know, kind of fatal at all. She's, as we say, sort of implausibly redemptive and kind of beatific in some ways. The more we talk about it, the more I kind of admire the film. It's not what I was expecting, like, on kind of any level.
Yeah, I mean, I would 100% recommend watching it. I'm sort of annoyed with myself that I hadn't seen it before in many levels, because I suppose it was just by the time we got a video player in our house, that was too long ago after that. It was just 10 years or more, so it didn't feel like it would be the sort of film that you would watch necessarily. So I missed it, and I'm kind of sorry I did.
But it hasn't moved the needle at all on making you fancy Richard Gere. No closer to that desire.
No. I asked some of my friends on various chats. I was like, I ran polls. How horny does Richard Gere make you feel? Was one of the questions.
What were the potential responses to that? I'm interested in.
Very non-meh. They were... So, distressingly for Richard Gere and fans of him, although I'm sure he'll get over this, is that on the groups that I ran it, a meh was the overwhelming response.
Yeah.
And now one person said, yes, when I was a teenager, and then qualified it with, it was the 80s, you had to be there.
No, fair. I'm sure there are contextualizing factors that have not carried across time. But yeah, it's not... He's also just... He's just a bit of a weirdo, especially early in the movie. Like, the way he... moments that are meant to be sexy, where he's interacting with people, you're just like, why are you saying that? There's a point where... And it's meant to be endearing, right? Because it's meant to show him being sort of soft and tender. But the point where he's with the Reinhardt, the woman who's murdered, he's like... You're a real sexy lady, baby. I like you.
Oh, that bit.
I'm going to make you feel real good. I'm going to make you real... And it's like, no, thank you. Do not like.
Yeah.
Ah, boke. Just not the one.